I would like to welcome everyone to this Americans for Peace Now briefing call with Hagit Ofran. I am Ori Mir here at APN's headquarters in Washington, D.C. I think Hagit Ofran really doesn't need an introduction. She, as you probably know, is the director of Peace Now's Settlements Watch project. You all either know her personally or at least know of her. I'll have her start by saying a few words about her project, about the Settlements Watch project. She will introduce what she does. And then she will say a few words about the report of the Committee on West Bank Settlements and Outposts, a report that Prime Minister Netanyahu appointed, a commission that he appointed in January and submitted its report more than 3 weeks ago on June 21st. The gist of the report was leaked to the media a little more than a week ago, and then it was officially published by the Prime Minister's office this week. Before I start and turn it over to Hagit, just a few housekeeping comments. This call is being recorded. We will upload the recording to our website, and we'll be happy to send the link upon request to participants or to non-participants. All participants are who are on the call right now will be on mute during Hagit's presentation. Once I shift it to Q&A mode, I will let you know, and I will let you know what to do in order to ask a question. And finally, I want to let you know that we're preparing a compendium of sorts of resources on the report, on the Levy report, which we will post prominently on our website. I expect it to be up sometime later today. It will include analysis, editorials from the media, also a link to the official English translation of the report's conclusions and recommendations. So I will let Hagit take it up from here. Thanks for joining us, Hagit. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Ori. Hello, everybody from Jerusalem. Settlement Watch of Peace Now is a project that is meant to bring the issue of settlements all the time to the public discourse, not to let go of anything that is happening in the settlement, because we believe it's essential to the future of Israel. And as part of my job as Settlement Watch project director, I also was involved in Peace Now's appearance before at the Levy Committee, when the Levy Committee that we are going to discuss today was established. They called for people to, if they want, to say anything on the subject, and we, of course, had a long list of thoughts and ideas on the legal situation of the settlement. I think in order to understand the whole idea, we should start with why this committee was nominated from the first place. And I think maybe my bottom line of all what I'm going to say is that this committee is a political committee, that it was a political need of this government to issue this committee, and the committee delivered a political report. And what happened was that since, I think we can mark the starting point at 2005, where Peace Now started with petitions to the Supreme Court against many of the illegalities that were going on in the West Bank, in illegal outposts, in construction on private land. And the issue started to be, what I say, a headache on the government that had to do something regarding the enforcement of the law. And although it took many years, eventually we got to some successes in the court, but actually ordering the government to evict some outposts. You probably heard of Migron, you've heard of the Olpena, which was not filed by Peace Now, but by Yesh Din. And the Netanyahu government, which is one, maybe the most right-wing government that we've had in many years, find itself have to evict settlements, something that they really, really don't want to do. And the all the political system and all the right wing were putting pressure on the government that it just cannot be. We cannot allow this to happen. However, legally, the Supreme Court said that it was illegal and you must evict it. So the settlers had different legal ideas in many, many fields that have to do with settlements. And they say, well, the government does not need to go through this legal path. We can take another legal path. And that was the main political pressure, because when we petitioned to the Supreme Court against the state, the state attorney is giving the legal advisory and representing the government. And the state attorney said, well, it's true, Migron is not legal, and we need to evict it. Settlers are saying, what kind of legal advisor is that, which is saying political things like we need to evict settlements? We need, actually what they wanted to do is to, not exactly to replace the state attorney, but to override it or to bypass what the state attorney is today, which is a big, big problem in terms of rule of law. And they cannot do that. Legally, it's not possible. So what Netanyahu could do was to nominate a committee. And this committee was established despite the state, the attorney general, which was against the establishment of this committee. And because legally it's not possible to override the state attorney, this committee is only a recommendation to the government, to the state attorney, and it's actually, you may say that it's just a legal, maybe suggestion to interpret the law that is in the settlement, in the West Bank. And now what we have is a political tool in the hands of the settlers and the right wing to say, look, we have a very serious committee that said that this and this and this is legal, etc. So this is the framework of the Levy report. It is not obligatory. It is only advisory. And there is a possibility to accept or reject whatever they want. And it's in the hands of the Attorney General and the government. What happened was, in my view, this could be potentially a challenge for us, because we're talking about a committee that is officially nominated by the government, that we have a former Supreme Court judge, Edmund Levy. So it's not just a lawyer that wrote something. It's a serious thing. And the settlers will surely use it in courts and in the public debate, etc. However, I think we were a little lucky with what came out of this committee, because they started with a declaration that is saying that the legal situation of Israeli presence in the West Bank is not occupation, which I think made things easier for us, because people don't really treat this so seriously. It sounds absurd. It's also, from legal perspective, very, very problematic. If it's not occupation, then what is it? Is it annexation? And if it is an annexation, if it's part of Israel or if it's anything else, how can you explain the discrimination, why Jews are citizens and the Palestinians are not citizens? All these questions that will be surely opened if this wasn't an occupation. And I think that's maybe one positive thing that we can say about the Levy findings. However, within the details of what the Levy committee is saying, we see that they're trying to frame the issue of land disputes as a normal civil issue between equal citizens. If I have a dispute with my neighbor, I go to court and that's it. However, in the West Bank, it's not the case. We have a responsibility of the occupier to protect the local citizens and to make sure that they are not the lands are not taken and their property is not taken, etc., etc. So it's actually maybe before you go to court, you may say you go to the police and to say it's my land, it's somebody took my land. In normal cases, if you have registration on your land and you go to the police should act and remove the intruders. However, in what the Levy report is saying, well, the police, or in this case is the Israeli occupation, does not need to move anything unless the Palestinian went to court and proved his ownership, despite the fact that he had some kind of documentation. That's one thing. Another thing has to do with what the committee was truly nominated for, and that was the official mission, was to how can we legalize those illegal outposts that are on state land, or I would prefer to call it public land, that is not direct theft of land. And they say that the government should legalize the outpost. It's not only an option, it's even an obligation, because the government actually promised by its doing that this, because the government gave funding to those outposts, it's actually like a promise that those will be settlements, and the government is obliged to legalize them. And as part of legalizing, they are making few shortcuts that we today claim that should be taken, like a government decision on establishment of a new settlement is one of the required or necessary measures that should be taken. And the Levy committee is saying, well, you don't need to have another government decision. However, all this recommendation is not so dramatic, because the government is able to do it already today. The government can legalize outposts. And unfortunately, we saw that this government did it already for three outposts, Bruchin, Bechelim, and Sansona, and two others that were done without a government decision, Shvut Rachel and Givat HaBrecha. So it's not unheard of. So it's actually showing the committee was not necessary for legal reasons. It was necessary for political as a political tool. And I think Netanyahu found himself now in a problem because of this headline that is saying, well, it's not occupation, we're not obliged to protect the citizens differently, and it's not the whole legal basis of our presence is not occupation. And the funny thing, that you know, this week the report was leaked to the media, and after that we saw pictures from the Prime Minister's office of the committee submitting the report to the Prime Minister. And I thought it was the same morning that it was given, and now it's out there in the media. However, it was published that the pictures of submitting the report were taken already 3 weeks ago, and the government kept it quiet. Netanyahu did not want it to be out in the media. He did not want people to hear about this Levy committee and its recommendation. And when it was leaked, then he said, okay, yes, it happened and it's here. And I think eventually what we'll see is that Netanyahu will try to bury some of the recommendations. At least it would be very hard to accept it as it is. However, it is going to be a challenge for us in the public debate and in courts because of some of the details of the recommendations, phrasing the ownership issues and the obligations of the state differently than what we believe and what we're laws, actually the interpretation of the Supreme Court until today. So I believe these are the main issues that I think relevant for the Levy report.
Great, Hagit. Thank you very much for this. We will go straight into the Q&A. What you need to do in order to ask a question is to press star six. Your phone then will be unmuted, and you will ask your question. What I'd ask you to do is to, after you ask the question, if you don't have a follow-up, to press star six again in order to re-mute yourself so that we don't have too much background noise and so on. So whoever wants to ask a question, please go ahead and do it. Please identify yourself as you do it, and I will take questions in the order that they're being asked. Please go ahead. And if we don't have someone to ask a question, then I will...
Since you seem to have a hole there. This is Aviva Meyer. Hagit, what's the worst case scenario here? Where can this go in the worst case?
Well, I like to think on the best case scenario, usually.
Well, give that afterwards.
I think I've given the more optimistic side of it before. The worst case scenario maybe would be some kind of adoption of this legal advisory at the state attorney general office in our next petitions or in upcoming petitions. In any dispute, legal dispute, the state is going to say, well, we don't need to protect the property in the same manner, etc. Some of the recommendations that are practical recommendations, like canceling specific military orders that help the enforcing the law, or establishment of local courts for land issues, etc., could lead to a situation where the doors of serious legal assistance for Palestinians will be much less open. And I think it's bad not only because it's not right morally, it might also have some effect on the way Palestinians struggle for their rights. I mean, if they feel that there is no chance at all in the Israeli legal system, and when somebody has his rights taken from him, then, and they don't have the legal path to take, they're only left with political or violent passes. And these, political, it could be okay, but if it's violent, then it's a big problem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hagit.
Gregory Law.
Go ahead.
My question is, how retroactive would this commission's recommendation be? Would it cover all settlements in the whole West Bank, or just new settlements, or some settlements? What does it cover?
It's not retroactive on things that were already ruled. For instance, in Migron, there was a ruling in the Supreme Court, the case is over. It's not going to change anything. But if there's going to be a new hearing or cases that are not closed yet, the state can change its mind and to come up with new answers. And then the court will have to decide whether to accept what the state is saying or not. Actually, to accept the recommendation of the Levy report. So it's not retroactive, but it could start already now for any future debate or existing debate that is not finished. But it's not going to, it's not going to legalize all settlements unless there is some action by the government or by others that went to court, etc. It's not automatic.
This is Ava Seligman-Kennard in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm, of course, concerned about the international reaction to this. How public is it at this stage of the game within the international press, and have we yet received any reaction? Thank you.
Well, I don't know so much of all of the international reaction to it. I heard that there were some reactions that very, very critical about it. I heard that there was an article in the New York Times that said it was very, very critical. So I don't know what can it lead to, but I think, you know, when I think of it, Israel has been occupying West all the time. It has been building settlements all the time. And the issue of whether it was legal or not legal to establish settlements was vague in a way, and not determined. And now what this committee is trying to do is to ask Israel to declare when we have the right to do it, and that's it. And when by doing this, we're actually exposing what Israel has been doing all the time anyway. So it's, I think, you know, as much as I, you know, I'm afraid of the reaction of the world and how lower we can get in our status in the world, I think it's better that the world and the Israeli public will be more aware of the facts. I mean, we've been living in a situation where we are occupying, but we don't feel that we are occupying. The settlement for the normal Israeli is a normal Israeli town. It's not the settlers or Israeli citizens. That's true even legally, but many Israelis believe that it's part of Israel. And I think what we're having now is that more and more people now realize exposing what we're truly doing, that we're truly taking other people's land, we are occupying them without rights, etc. And, you know, in some ways, I think one of the achievements of Peace Now's battle against settlements, which is a battle, I mean, when we went to court, we did not expect the court to end occupation or to evict all settlements. But what we wanted to lead to was that it will be more on the public debate and more on the public awareness, and that the illegality or the ways that the settlers and the government have been establishing those settlements, taking public money to actually land grab without taking care of any rights of the Palestinians. This is now exposed, and in some ways, to some extent, it's even stopped. You know, there are no new outposts established since 2005, except for very small shacks that the youth would put up and the army would take down, but it's not the same settlement that has been built. And almost no new construction on private Palestinian land. And this was what would have never, I believe that it wouldn't have been stopped unless we went to court and made the government decide or face the consequences of allowing this to go on. So I think And part of what happened is that the settlers are trying to push back and bring their legal way of looking on this occupation, and they are exposed now. And so it's complicated.
Thank you, Hagit. Is there another question? Please go ahead.
Ari?
Gregory Law again. I'm sorry if nobody asked the question.
I have a question. My name is Edward Abrahams. I'm in Washington. My question is, as much as it would like to, how likely is it that the government will be able to bury this report, and that for the reasons you just described, the debate about the future of the occupation will now be seriously joined, both because the right and the left won't let it be buried?
Try to predict. We don't know exactly what the pressures will be and how it will work. But I think maybe rhetorically it won't be buried ever, and it will be used by right-wing speakers all the time. However, I think it will be hard for the government to just, declare that there is no occupation. In terms of saying it legally in court, I think it's going to be a little hard. But however, it could happen. It's not impossible, but I think it's just going to be a heavy price politically and internationally.
Let's do this. This is Ori from Washington. Let's wait. Let's give a chance to people who haven't asked a question yet, and once those have asked their questions, we'll do a second round. So please go ahead, Ms. So it was a feminine voice, a female voice. Let's let her give her a chance, and then whoever was the male voice that I just heard. Okay. So let's go with the male voice, whoever it was. Yes, please
this
go ahead.
This is Ed Hemmick from El Paso, Texas.
Yes, please go ahead.
The article that appeared in Haaretz about 3 days ago, the Chaim Levinson story, he made a reference that there was the committee report recommended renewing the Jordanian land registry arrangements. Can you explain how that differs from land registry within Israel proper?
The land registration?
It says the reference was to the Jordanian land registry arrangements that were halted in 1967 to renew them. How is that different than land registry within Israel proper?
Well, yes. Most of the West Bank, actually two-thirds of the West Bank, were never registered in the land were not registered in a very thorough way. It was Ottoman registration, which was very general, without maps, without a measurer, without defining exactly the property of all the inherent of every parcel in the West Bank. So what we have today is two-thirds of the West Bank with a registry which is much more thin, I would say, that it's much easier to argue. And it has a lot of legal implications. And in Israel, we managed to register, I believe, I don't know if it's all of the land, but I believe that it's most of the land, only in East Jerusalem still, parts are not fully registered. So when we have a dispute or somebody is invading to somebody else's land, it's easy. We have registration. We can open the books and see who's the owner. But in the West Bank, the books are not so accurate because they're very old and they were not done in the long way. And Israel stopped this registration in 68 because the real reason was not to allow the Palestinians to have their deeds registered, but officially because we wanted to protect those who became refugees, those who ran away, those absentees, from others to register their land in their names. That was the excuse. So the Levy report is saying we don't need that. We can register land again. Question is how they're going to register the land and what will they take into consideration. And that's what I will be afraid of, that they will, in a wholesale way, will register many of the lands as state land and not allow the Palestinians to register their own. So I hope that answers most of what you wanted.
Thank you, Hagit. Next question.
Hi, this is Justin Finkelstein from New York City. I wanted to ask about the mainstream Israeli response to the Levy Committee report. Like in the mainstream news channels and mainstream newspapers, is there generally ambivalence toward the report, or is there opposition, or is there identification with the report? Thanks.
Well, I'm not sure that I would be the most objective person to answer this. My feeling is that it wasn't such a big issue. We had to, this week, most of the mainstream media was dealing with the issue of ultra-Orthodox and the coalition crisis and all this. But as far as I feel, the report was not accepted as a professional report, a governmental report, but as a right-wing report, as a very political report. And I think that maybe because of that, I was a little optimistic about it, because it was framed as the report of the right wing. Because of this headline that it's not occupation, and it just sounds ridiculous to most of them, at least of the media.
This is Ori in Washington. Just a quick advice. If you go to our website and click on blog on the upper right hand and scroll down a little bit, you'll find an article by Boaz Okun, who's the legal affairs analyst of Yediot Ahronot, an article that I think reflects a lot of what we've seen in the mainstream media, not the right-wing media in Israel, but the mainstream one, regarding the report. Again, as Hagit said, depicting it as a political one. Go ahead. Next question, please.
Well, there's no question. This is
yes,
Gregory.
Yes, please go ahead.
Again.
No problem, Gregory.
I don't know how many of you on the East Coast heard this, but a week ago, last Friday, there was a very good interview on NPR PLO representative in the United States. And this was before the Levy report was published, or at least known to him. And so because Michael Oren had also been interviewed on the same program just a few days before, a couple of weeks before, they kept asking this man, this PLO representative, whether the request that the PLO was making that all settlements be stopped was just like a precondition that they were asking for, as opposed to Netanyahu saying, well, I'm willing to talk without any preconditions, okay? And so he said, this is not a precondition. This is a law. This is something that's been sitting there for many years. We're not asking for a precondition. And he was trying to show that there was no symmetry between those two issues. And if that's true, then if they continue to think that, then there will be no negotiation.
Well, I think when both sides would be serious about readiness to talk, all preconditions will be ignored. And both sides are playing with their rhetoric. However, I think for an Israeli, from the Israeli perspective, the Israeli interest is to stop the settlements, because we are wasting, anything that we're putting there now is not only going to cost us when we want to evict it, but we will have to evict it, but also makes the Palestinians less ready to a compromise and give up on the chance of two states. And that's a real threat to Israel.
I have a question.
Ari?
Yes, go ahead. Could you identify yourself, please?
It's Jim Klotznik.
Yes. Jim, maybe let the lady who started asking go first, and then I'll call on her.
It's
okay, no problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Excuse me. This is Frances Payne Adler from Portland, Oregon. Hello, Hagit. I'd like to know what has been the Palestinian response to this report?
I'm sorry that I don't really know. I didn't hear.
I have seen a Palestinian, an official Palestinian response coming from the PLO office here in Washington. It totally dismissed the report. It called it a joke, a bad joke. And I think that has been the overall tone of the responses we've heard from the Palestinian Authority. But I haven't been following it very closely. Jim Klotznik, please go ahead.
Yes. Hagit, will the government in any manner try to use this report regarding its obligations to evacuate the Migron settlement?
I think Migron is already a closed case, although, as you probably heard, it's not really a closed case. The settlers filed a new petition claiming to have bought some parts of the land and now asking not to evict those houses that are on those parcels. So theoretically, the Levy report could be used by the state attorney next week when they need to write their answer to this petition. However, I don't believe that specifically they will use it, although we don't know. It's really a political question. So they might use it, but not as a reference. You know, it's not that it's an obligation, that the legal situation has changed. So it's not that they now would say, oh, it is really legal to take Palestinian land. Or actually what Levy said about Palestinian land is that not always do we need to evict it. If we realize that it's private, maybe we can leave it intact and compensate those Palestinians. However, this is not what is now in debate in the court. The debate will be only about those parcels. Should they be removed now, or should we wait until we make sure that it was really purchased or not? I just want to say, if I already talked about Migron, that we are positive that the documents that were shown to court are forged, and there is now even an investigation in the police regarding this forgery. And actually, we will have to wait and see whether the state is going to try to buy more time and not evict some of the outposts, or not evict all of it. But I believe that we will be able to bypass this challenge too, because we're talking about forgery and because of the fact that the new Migron is already ready for them The government has been putting more than 50 million shekels now to build an alternative home. It's almost more than 1 million shekels per family that we have already paid. So I think it will be hard now to withdraw from it, but we'll wait and see.
If I may interject, I just read a small report. This is Ava in the San Francisco area, that security forces arrived at the illegal West Bank outpost of Migron and raised several illegal structures. Three settlers were detained over violating a restricted military zone order. This is today on YNET by Itamar Fleitman.
No, I need to check this out. I don't know.
Hadid, before we close, and we will on the 45 minutes past the hour, so in a few minutes, I just wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about Peace Now's 4% campaign. Could you talk a little about that?
Oh, yeah. We've been... Maybe I should start with a feeling that we have now in the public atmosphere around all the issue of the Ultana and Migron, that suddenly even mainstream media that usually are not so much talking about this issue were writing things very critic about the settlers. Like they were pushing it too far, that for the Ultana thing, for those 30 families that were renting an apartment in an illegal building, for that we are going to give now 70 million shekels to move the houses, and we bring so much money. Like, it seems that those settlers, that are so small group, have so much power in this government that the government is only dealing with them all the time. It's so they're occupying the public agenda all the time, and people are starting now to feel some inconvenience with all that. And what we wanted to do, and we call it the 4% campaign. We already started some of it. The settlers are only 4% of the Israeli public, and that's a number that we believe people don't really realize, because when you open the radio and the television, what you hear about them so much. There are so many of them in the government and in the Knesset, but they are only 4%. And what we're going to do with it, we're saying, go back to proportions. We cannot, you know, they cannot run the state of Israel, those 4%. We're going to publish a report about how much money they get, the settlers are getting from the Israeli public money taxpayer. And it's not so much of a bottom line of how much money it is. If, you know, if it would be 1 billion, 10 billion, I think it's less, it's not so easy to connect to those numbers. But if we will show there are 4% in the society, but the budget of the Ministry of Housing, they get 15% of this budget, and compare it to the 4%, you see that they get more. If education for children in Israel are, I don't remember by heart the numbers, but it's, I don't know, every pupil gets 2,000 shekels a year from the government, they get 6,000. And don't take those numbers as accurate, because it's all in the report. We had a lot of work done in collecting the data and to compare it per person and to try to really track the money, because it's not so easy. It's not in the budget, but we found some ways to calculate those numbers. So we are really preparing. We want it to be a series of activities around those data. I'm sure you will hear about it, and the Israeli public will hear about it, because it's now, you know, the social justice issues are more on the agenda. There's no openness, and because we have good data this time that it could be used well, I believe we will get public attention and hopefully support for that. And maybe just another comment about the 4% issue. Everywhere you go today, especially in Israel, people are saying, well, the two-state solution is dying or even already dead. People are very much despaired. And the settlers are now trying to say, we are so many, we are so big, you cannot ever evict us. So we want to try to give some other proportion to it. It's not finished. The 4%, and if you take the Geneva Initiative line of land swap, the number of settlers that will be need to be evicted are about 1.5% of the Israeli public. So it's not, I mean, it's not impossible, and it's not so many, and we need to have proportions here.
Thank you, Hagit. If there's one last question, we have time for one question, quick one, if anyone has and would like to ask.
Tom Feldman from Denver.
Go ahead, Tom.
The report, the 4% report published?
Hi, Tom. Well, it's not published yet. We're working on it. I gave you some preview or inside information.
When can we expect it?
We're hoping in the next few weeks to make all the, you know, the graphics ready, and then to wait to the right time in terms of the media and to go out with it, and then to start a series of activities around it and hopefully. So in a few weeks, we need to be a little patient.
Very good. Thanks.
May I ask one more question? What is it that we can do?
You know, continue your involvement, and maybe Oli, you can say a little more about what you can do back there in the United States. It's just I tell you, my personal feeling is that your support and the fact that you are there is very, very important to us, not only because of the very support, you know, the funding that you help us, but also for, you know, that our voice is echoed in America, and that as you know, America plays a very important role in our conflict and in our lives. And for me personally, it's also, you know, we are in the same family, and we are what things that are happening in Israel have an effect on in America too, and vice versa. So I see it as a real partnership, and it's really, really important for us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hagit, and thanks for the question. Honestly, it was not a planted question. It's exactly the kind of question that one wants to get at the end of such a conference call. Specifically on the Levy report, we have an action alert that we sent out to our activists, and it's now the leading item on our website. We called on people to write letters to send letters to the Israeli ambassador here in the United States, telling him what they feel about this report and about the kind of damage that will be caused to Israel if Israel's government adopts the report. Beyond the issue of the levy, and there's a lot more than you can do, obviously, on this issue of the levy report. Or you can write letters to your local newspaper, publish op-eds, talk to people. But above all that, and beyond all that, I would urge everyone to get involved in us, and if you're already involved, to get even more involved with us. There is a wealth of information that you can find on our website regarding various things. If you haven't signed up for the daily news nosh, you can do that, which I think would contribute a lot to your being on top of the news and so on. support us and stay in touch with us, and that would be great help. I want to thank everyone who participated. I want to encourage you to participate in the future. The recording of this briefing call will be posted soon on our website. I want to thank you again. I want to thank Hagit, and we'll see you soon in another briefing call. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.
Thank you.